Word. We want to thank you for your family, your community, your people. We thank you for your spirit and what you're doing within us as we walk and journey with you. Lord, may you speak again today. I know you are. I know you will. May we be listening and be prepared to respond to what you're saying. Amen. Awesome. Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be alive, isn't it? Is it summer? Is it winter? Is it spring? Is it... Are the All Blacks good? Are they bad? Are they, you know, there's so many uncertainties in life, isn't there? I want to start, as I often do, with a question. What do you believe to be true? Have you ever stopped to really think about what you believe? Now, I don't want any answers right now because we believe a lot of things about a lot of stuff. But have you ever thought about what you believe is foundational to your life? What do you believe about God? What do you believe about right and wrong? What do you believe about what God is doing in the world? Have you ever stopped to really think much about what you believe? And have you ever challenged your beliefs or invited someone to challenge your beliefs to see if they stand up to scrutiny? My observation of a lot of Christians is they run from challenge. And I'm not sure why, because if what we believe is good and solid and God is true and powerful, we don't have to run, because if we believe in the God of all creation, he's true. Do you believe that? Do you have the confidence that he is good and he can do amazing things? See, what you believe to be true shapes your decisions and your responses to the things that happen in life. What you think about and you know, the foundational things that you believe will determine how you act, the choices you make, and all of that. As you know, I've been going through just the story of Gideon. If I just do a bit of a recap here, when the Lord confronted Gideon, he came and he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." And Gideon's response was, "I don't believe you." That's my paraphrase, but that's essentially what he said. So God said, "The Lord is with you," and Gideon said, "No, you're not." And this is the story of Gideon. He believed that God had abandoned him and abandoned Israel because their oppression by the Midianites proved that to be true in Gideon's mind. The fact that they were oppressed told Gideon that God had abandoned them. And yet here God is saying to him, "I am with you." Have you ever experienced something like that? Where God comes and says something to you that's so contrary to what you're convinced of that you just can't believe it? Have you ever had that experience? I think whenever God turns up, I often have that experience. It's like when he speaks, is that true? And part of our job is to learn to bring our belief into line with what God knows to be true, because he knows a lot more than what we do. See, the reality is that God hadn't abandoned Israel. He gave them over to the Midianites. Being given over isn't abandonment. It is given. God has given them over so that to these Midianites and to the worship of the gods that the Israel were worshipping, for them to learn something. Now, I know that might sound a bit weird, but God is not afraid of his people suffering a little bit, because he knows that we can learn in our suffering. In fact, I've often said, if you know me or you've walked with me a bit of time, I would always say pain is an awesome teacher. And if you haven't learned something through your painful process, you're a hopeless student. You're a sucker for punishment. Pain is an amazing teacher. It tells you what is good and what is not. Sometimes when we suffer pain, we know that there is something is not right. Suffering can teach us, and God is not afraid of his people experiencing some suffering, because he is big enough to keep them and to redeem them from that at the right time. Do you believe that? I want to give you a little bit of an example. When I was an apprentice, I was employed by a training company. The training company's job was to make me an electrician. That was their purpose, but they had no means to do that from a practical experience. When they employed me, they took responsibility for my education, so I did all the book work. They took responsibility for my license to make sure I was signed up and did all the things. They would help me become a qualified electrician. But how they did that was by handing me over to what they call a secondment, an employer who I would work for and learn the skills of the trade. Does that make sense? So in essence, my training company, every year they would look at me and they would look at what I needed to learn. Then they would give me over to a particular company to be trained with whatever that company did. And I would learn those skills. And over the course of my training, I worked with three different employers and learned a huge variety of things. In fact, I would say much more than if I'd only ever worked for one company. Now, while I was under the on a day-by-day basis, I was under the authority of the workplace I was working in. Does that make sense? They were my bosses. They were the ones that were telling me what to do and not to do, and how they treated me was up to them. But my training company had ultimate authority over the top of that. And if things weren't going well, I knew I had someone I could go to sort out any issues. Or if things weren't happening well, I could go to someone that was higher than the situation I was in. Does that make sense? They had a greater authority over what my training actually looked like. And when my training had finished, my company could present me to the world, so to speak, qualified, experienced, and with an ability to work with a variety of people in a variety of roles. They handed me over three times to different companies so that I would learn. And I think this is something of what God does with his people, as he gives them over to things. Now, we tend to think he's punishing them. You can go that way if you like. And in one sense, that's true. But I actually have learnt that God is far more about growing us and disciplining us to learn something. And so when he gives us over or gives his people over, he's got good in mind. Does that make sense? And one day he's going to bring them back out because he's got that ultimate authority. See, the Israelites chose to worship the gods of the land that they were in, the gods of Canaan, the gods of the Midianites, against the direct command of God. And so God gave them over to that worship, gave them over to the people that lived that way, gave them over to the suffering that was going to come from that worship until they cried out to the Lord. And when he heard them, he could sense, hey, they've learned something here. And he responded. Now, you've got to be a little bit careful because God's not just a vindictive, right, you're not doing what I want, so therefore I'm going to make you suffer. No, no, no. He's helping them learn. And he's also talking over generations. It's not just, you know, every generation learns something new. So today what I want to do is I want to look at how God moves Gideon from a belief that God has abandoned Israel to a belief that God can do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine according to his power that is work within his people. Does that make sense? So a belief of God's not, doesn't care, God doesn't exist, God has abandoned us, God is just off doing his own thing, whatever that belief is, to God can do anything if I just trust him and obey. So we're going to look at Judges chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 33 we're going to pick up from where we left off last week. Judges chapter 6 and verse 23, I think you're going to on the screen there anyway. Now, all of the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples joined forces and crossed over the Jordan and camped in the valley of Jezreel. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, summoning the Abiezrites to follow him. He sent messages throughout Manasseh, calling them to arms, and also into Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, so that they too went up to meet them. And Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand as you have promised, look, I'm going to place a wool fleece on the threshing floor. If there is dew only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know that you will save Israel by my hand as you have said." And that is what happened. Gideon rose early the next day. You can imagine, no, you must have been excited. Has God answered? And he squeezed the fleece and wrung out the dew, a whole bowl full of water. It's obviously different dew to what we have, eh? I mean, it was very, very wet. So then Gideon said to God, "Do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece, but this time make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered with dew." That night God did so, only the fleece was dry. All the ground was covered with dew. Early in the morning, chapter 7, verse 1. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. And the Lord said to Gideon, "You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into the hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left while 10,000 remained. But the Lord said to Gideon, There are still too many men. Take them down to the water and I will thin them out for you there. If I say this one shall go with you, he shall go. If I say this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink. 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs, and all the rest got down on their knees to drink. And the Lord said to Gideon, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home. So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites home, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. Who would love to be Gideon right now? It's kind of hard to imagine. It's hard to put ourselves in that place, isn't it? But yeah. What's so exciting in here is that Gideon has heard from and is hearing from the Lord. He's got this amazing, God is speaking and he's hearing. He believes God is real. We began at the beginning, he wasn't even sure if it was God or not, but he believes God is real. He knows God is talking to him. He's hearing very, very clearly. He heard the Lord challenge the family's worship of Baal, to destroy the altar and to bring the worship back to the Lord. And Gideon did that. And he began to grow in maturity. He began to grow in belief. He began to grow in his trust of the Lord. And now we see the Midianites, which, as we read there, is actually a collection of a bunch of people coming together, and they were coming to destroy Israel. They wanted to get rid of them. They wanted to take them out, and they wanted to take their land back. It must have been a terrifying sight. Further on, I think towards end of chapter 7 or towards chapter 8, there are about 135,000 soldiers. That's a lot of people. That's huge number. And they'd moved into the plain. They come across the Jordan River and they were camping, preparing for war. It must have been a terrifying sight. And then look what happens. In the start of our reading in verse 33 there, it says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. The New Living Translation says that he was clothed with power from the Spirit. And it says he blew a trumpet. So when he saw this massive army, the Spirit came upon him and he rose up. He blew a trumpet, which called his family and the tribes that he destroyed their Baal altar to come to prepare for war. And they came. That's a massive shift, isn't it, right there? They started to believe that he could do something. He blew the trumpet, they came. And then he sent out messengers to another bunch of tribes around and they all came. And he managed to gather 32,000 soldiers. Isn't that awesome? These people all gathered around this man. And we see this nobody called Gideon, who was hiding in a wine press, simply trying to feed his family, believing that God had abandoned them and that he was the least of his family. He is now assembling 32,000 warriors to fight. Man, that's exciting, isn't it? Do you believe you could gather a bunch of people to go up against an enemy? That must have been, at that time, incredible. He must have been full of faith, going, wow, I put the call out and look what's happening. God, you are doing stuff. And they gathered around Gideon and maybe they heard what he's saying and they responded and they're going, we need to fight. And Gideon must have been so encouraged, but God sees something very, very different here. Because 32,000 is a lot of people, but it's still a lot less than 135,000. It's actually a ratio of 1 to 4, or 1 to 4 point something or other. So they were outnumbered 4 to 1. So for every one of Gideon's soldiers, there were 4 enemy soldiers. And so Gideon, who is growing in his belief, okay, you got to understand that. It's not that he has no belief. He is growing in his belief, is going, okay, I've got a 4 to 1 disadvantage here. I need some reassurance. And so he goes to God and says, hey, just to be sure that I've heard right, just to be sure that you're going to do what you said, I want to have some reassurance, because 4 to 1 is not very good odds when you're on the one side. But So he says, I'm going to lay out a fleece, and if it's wet and the ground is dry, then you'll know, I'll know you're with me. And God honored him. And he did it, you know, amazingly. It wasn't just slightly damp. It was so wet compared to the dry ground. Gideon knew it wasn't just just chance. God was at work here. But 4-1 is still overwhelming odds. And so Gideon says, hey, just to be sure, I really want to be certain about this. And I need to be convincing for my men that have gathered around me. Can you do the opposite? And so God does. Can you see Gideon's belief growing? He's not doing it from a lack of belief. He's doing it from a place of growing belief. He needs to be sure. But of course, now there's no more excuses. He has his army. God has proven that he's with him. He has God on his side, and he's ready to go to war. He knows he's down 4-1. He knows that he's got an inferior army, but he's got a belief that God is with him. So he's actually prepared to go for that. Have you ever been in a disadvantaged situation, but do you know that God's with you, and so you step in? This is where Gideon is right now. It's actually a really, really cool place. And it says that early in the morning, Gideon moves his army. This is chapter 7, verse 1. He moves his army toward the enemy, and they set up their camp ready to go to war. Gideon's ready to go. He has heard from God. He has belief, and he knows that God is with him, and he knows that God is able to do much, much more than he can see with his eyes. He knows that the people have gathered around him and that they're supporting him. God had spoken through the request Gideon asked, so he's absolutely sure that God's going to go with him. The miraculous reality of the fleece over the last two nights is just blowing his mind. He's probably nervous, but he's ready. You know, he knows this is going to be good. He's holding to the belief and view that God will do what is not yet seen. And from a human perspective, it makes no sense. They're outnumbered. They're going to lose. And then he gets up the next morning ready to go into battle. And God says, hey, you've got too many men. What a quiet time he had that morning. God, would you be with us as we go into battle? And God says, you've got too many men. Can you imagine it? The excitement that was building, the excitement of God speaking, the excitement of the request being heard, being full of hope and belief. You've just told your men what is happening. You've moved them up going, we're outnumbered, but God is with us. And they're pumped, they're ready to go, and then God's like, you've got too many men. And God, Gideon is, wow, what would you do? But what's fascinating here is that Gideon doesn't question it. It's a really interesting shift in his journey. He's just like, oh, okay. Because his faith is so great in God right now that he's actually listening and believing what God is saying. See, God is a God who is focused on much more than just getting rid of a few enemies. 135,000 people is nothing to God. Do you know that? Do you have a belief that God can deal with 135,000 enemies? Do you believe that God can change the circumstances that you're living in at the drop of a hat? Do you believe he has the power and ability to do whatever he wants? I don't believe many of us have that belief. But God can. But God is actually focused on far more than just dealing with some enemies. I think what he's wanting to do, I know he's wanting to do, is to grow belief and faithfulness in his people and in this man who he is speaking with. And we see this all through the Bible. What God desires the most is not victory, but faithfulness. He wants us to be his people, regardless of what's going on around you. He wants his people to trust in him and him alone, not in our strength, not in our ability to win, not in our technology or skills or knowledge. He wants us to simply believe that he is able to do what he says he will do. And he wants us to trust him with that. And so he ends up whittling this army of 32,000 down to 300 men. And so we've now gone from a ratio of 4-1 to a far more exciting 450-1. So for every soldier that Gideon has, they have got to deal with 450 enemies. Okay? Now we're talking. Okay? But what's incredible here is that Gideon doesn't push back. Do you notice that? Gideon doesn't go, you what? Now, he possibly might have been thinking that, but Gideon just goes and does what God says. His belief has grown to the point that he knows that because God has spoken, God will follow through. Man, I want to get to that place in my walk with him. I'm not sure if I'm there yet. I've experienced some of that. I've stepped out. But wouldn't it be awesome to go, you know, this is not just difficult. This is impossible. But God's still going to do what he said. See, God, if you look at Judges 7, chapter 7, verse 7, he says, with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. That's what God says to Gideon. Let the others go home. And so what does Gideon do? He sends the others home. And he sits there with 300 men. His confidence in God is in such a different place to what it was when God first turned up and said, the Lord is with you. What's changed? His belief. It's the only thing that's changed. What God said was true is, I'm with you. That was true. Gideon just didn't believe it. But now Gideon knows that God is with him. Incredible. That's what we need to be like. He has shifted from God has abandoned us. Why is this something happened to, man, I can't wait to see what you're going to do with just 300 of us. This is going to be good. This is going to be exciting. Do you have that kind of belief in God? Now, we're none of us are called to go and kill off 135,000 Midianites. That was Gideon's job at that point in history. But whatever you're facing, do you have the kind of confidence that God can do what is impossible in your eyes? Do you believe that God can transform your family situation? Do you believe that God can set you free from addiction? Do you believe that God can turn around things that he is wanting to turn around? Do you believe that God can come in and change what you're calling out for? I hope so. See, this is the God we serve, the God for whom nothing is impossible. This is the place he calls us to, is to be completely reliant on him. And see, what I've learned over my life and what I've learned as I read this is that miracles don't happen if we stick to what we know. If we stick to what we know or what we believe. We have to learn to stick with what God knows and with what God believes and what God is telling us. And when God says something, it's really hard sometimes to be convinced that that is true, because we have put an awful lot of weight on our belief, on our understanding, and on what. And so Gideon said, God has abandoned us. Why? Because where are the stories of the miracles? It wasn't that God had abandoned them. They had abandoned God. They had walked away from him. And God works within people by his spirit to bring about the miracles and the transformations and the changes that are going on. And we need to be people who walk by faith and being led by the Spirit, and then God can do amazing things in our obedience. See, growing in belief is about putting more faith in what God says than putting faith in what we believe. Does that make sense? So when God speaks, we need to learn to trust that he can follow up. You know, if we look ahead to the Gospels, we see Jesus doing amazing miracles, don't we? And yet, when he went to his hometown, it says he couldn't do anything there because of a lack of belief. It's not his belief. It's the people that he's going to minister to. The journey he took his disciples on was a journey of growing their belief in who he was, who the Father is, and with what he was calling them to do and be. He was calling them to view life through the lens of the Father, not through the lens of men. And if we're going to be disciples engaged in the mission of God in this world, we have to learn to be like that. We have to learn to understand that God has a purpose. Not we don't have a purpose, God has a purpose. And we need to get on board with his purpose. We need to learn to trust Jesus. And you see, if you study the scriptures and you study both the Gospels but then the New Testament, you see that that is what changed in the disciples. It was their belief. And who they were, what they were about, what God was doing in them. They began to trust Jesus completely, and they lived obeying his commands, and they saw many miraculous things happen. Wouldn't that be exciting if we saw more of that? Yeah. Wonder what would need to change for that to happen. Coming back to Gideon, what I find so amazingly incredible, one of the amazingly incredible things in this story is, and I don't know if you've noticed this, is that as God is working in one man, and as Gideon's belief is growing, the others around him start to change. They begin to believe. They begin to grow. When Gideon took out the Baal altar and said, "Now we're going to worship the Lord," and they built an altar to the Lord, they initially went, "Whoa, what's going on? You need to pay." And then when Gideon's father challenged them on that, they all backed off. And when he blew his trumpet, who were the first people to respond? All those that wanted him dead. There'd been a shift. One man's faithfulness started to influence and shape a whole community. Just think about that. One man's journey can shape a whole community. See, the thinking that God had abandoned Israel wasn't just Gideon's opinion. It was everyone's opinion. And many were probably thinking that, but as Gideon stepped out in belief, the others began to turn and come back. And it wasn't necessarily easy, but they began to come into a place of belief. And as the Midianite army gathers in force just over the hill there in the plains, the Israelites began to believe that God is at work. And even when Gideon reduces the numbers, the 300 still stand with him. They're fully aware of the odds as well. And they are not afraid, because all of those who were afraid got sent home. 300 men were ready and prepared, and they believe that God will use them. Gideon said, "God's going to use us," and they believe it. They weren't afraid. They were probably a bit crazy, but they were confident that God is at work here. They can see the belief in Gideon, and they get on board with what God has said. And as Gideon maybe testifies to what God has been saying, they're picking up on it, and they're beginning to run with it. It's exciting, isn't it? See, when your faith grows, it challenges and encourages those around you. Part of the point, or part of the reason why we need to gather, is to encourage each other. How many of you feel a bit down about your faith at times? How many of you feel like, is God really there sometimes? Yeah, we need to get around and go, yeah, it might not look like it, but God is around. And yeah, when Mark was asking, what does God do? We should be going, God is this, or I experienced this because I saw that person doing this, or whatever it might. We need to be encouraging each other, because it will help each of our faith grow. Believing in Jesus is not just about you. It's not just about your journey. Trusting the Lord gives others confidence to trust the Lord. When you step out in faithfulness, others are encouraged to step out in faithfulness. When you live for Jesus and enjoy the peace and stability that His rule brings into your life in the midst of this crazy world, it reveals our God to those around us. When you live differently and people go, there's something different about you, and you get to share the God we serve, the Jesus that we know and love, it is a testimony to the lack of what they don't have and invites them to become part of the mission of God in this world. See, in John chapter 6, verse 28, the crowd was following Jesus. It was a bunch of people, and they asked Jesus, "What must we do to do the works God requires?" And Jesus answered this, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one He has sent." When we look at Jesus, do we believe that He is the Son of God? Do we believe He is the one in whom the Father is well pleased? Do we believe that the way He lived is the way of the kingdom and the way that we should live? Do we believe that He died and He rose again that we might have life in Him? See, God has always called His people to belief in Him and His ways. He's always called it right through. You read every example. God has always called every person to belief, because it's a belief in a God that we can't see but know is true and powerful and can do all things. It's those people that change the world. It's those people that change the situations or see situations change. God has always demanded that His people trust Him and obey Him. And when they did that, miraculous, astounding, and wonderful realities happened. A whole book full of them in here, if you want to go reading. And when they went away from God, that's when it all stopped. Interesting, eh? There's freedom in the Lord. So how many of us would like to see more miracles? Okay. That's great. But did you know that miracles are not the reason we exist? Miracles are not the thing we live for. But I believe miracles happen with those who live in God's reality. And I think that miracles should be a very normal part of life that we go, oh yeah, that's normal. God is worthy of our praise. Does that make sense? See, miracles happen with those who believe in God's reality. Miracles shift things so that we can live free, faithful lives. Miracles are things that, you know, when blind men see, great, you've still got to live life. And it's a wonderful miracle, but you've then got to get on with life and live a faithful life. If we deal with 135,000 men, great, but you've still got to get on and live life after that. See, Israel needed the miracle of 300 men defeating 135,000 soldiers because they had walked away from the Lord and come under the oppression of the God they served. And the miracle reminded them that God was in control, not their ability to fight the enemy. And I would argue that even today, we've got to be careful that we don't get so confident that we just quietly say, we've got this, God. If you just stand over there, I'm going to show you how good I am. And I think that's what we do, isn't it? Is we forget that in our freedom and in our joy and in all the stuff that we start to believe it's because we're really, really good. But it's not. It's God within us. It's the God within us, the God that we live for. It's the God that lives within us is the one that does those incredible things. See, God is in control, the only one, he is the only one worthy of worship. It showed them that just as God had handed them over to the Midianites, he is just as capable of and willing to bring them back out of control of the Midianites. As he handed them over, he brought them back from the power of the enemy, because God has ultimate authority. Do you believe that? Our role is to be engaged in growing our belief that God is who he says he is, and that God is going to do what he says he's going to do. In Mark 9:24, a famous verse here, where a man had a son that was possessed by a demon, and no one could heal him, and he just asked Jesus, can you help us? And Jesus says, anything is impossible for those who believe. And I think I love this guy, because he just says, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. And I think that's a really, really honest answer, isn't it? We do have belief, yeah? Do you believe God is real? Do you wonder often? Yeah, I believe. But man, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I know you exist and I know you can, but I'm really, this guy is questioning, I'm kind of not sure if you can. And what we see in this journey of Gideon is he's growing his belief. He's trying to overcome the unbelief that God can do this incredibly ridiculous thing. Our belief is something that grows, and we walk in the reality of belief and unbelief all of the time. It's not one or the other. It's actually both. We believe to the extent that we believe. But God's going to call you to a far greater depth of belief. And you've got to overcome the unbelief that you have in that particular area. God can heal a blind man, but he can't solve my addiction. God can sort that person out and bring them to faith, but he's never going to say, work on my family. God can forgive all those people, but he'll never forgive me for what I've done. God can, you know, there's belief and there's unbelief. God can accept me when I'm doing well, but if I do wrong, he doesn't love me anymore. You know, some of us just can't believe that God can love us because we're not good enough, are we? And I just want to, I just thank God that he doesn't love me because I'm worthy of love, because I'd be hopeless. I just wouldn't be worthy of love. But he loves us anyway. Our belief is something that grows, and that's what I want you to see in the story of Gideon. The passage that I read is this growing belief that God is who God says he is, and he is with Gideon, and he is going to do what he said he's going to do. Do you believe? Do you believe in Jesus? Do you believe that God is the only one worthy of your worship? Do you believe that God is the only one worthy of your devotion? Do you believe that God is the only one worthy of your life and for you to commit to him? It's a great question to ask yourself, even if you've been in church for a long time. Do you believe? If you don't know Jesus, I would love to go on a journey with you to help you know him and to help you come to a place of belief. Because he is believable. He is trustworthy. He is able to do immeasurably more than we could ever dream, ask, imagine. Our role is to get on board with what he is saying and doing. And so as we finish up, I want to challenge us to stand. How about we stand? If you don't know Jesus, I want to talk to you after service. I'd love you to come forward. But for those of you that do, and maybe even if you don't, I wonder what's going on in your life that you don't believe God can change. Now, I know you're not allowed to say it in here because it's not good Christian to say that God can't do something, but we hold those unbeliefs within ourselves, don't we? And we've got to learn to be honest about this stuff and believe that God knows your unbelief. God came to Gideon and said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior, you silly little man hiding in the wet wine press." Now he said, "The Lord is with you." That is a fact. Gideon just had to catch up with that. So I want you to think about what's something that's going on in your life where maybe there's unbelief. You know God theoretically can solve, fix, find a way, transform, change. It might be something within your own life. It might be a relationship. It might be a challenger. It might be a financial. Well, I don't know what it is. God's just kind of unlimited. It's so, you know. Would you dare to believe that God can do something? Would you dare to believe that God is able to? So as I pray, I just want you to hold that up. Just, you know, hold it in your mind, whatever. And just, God, I want to help my unbelief, okay? Father, you know each of us. Father, you know where we're at. You know who we are. Father, you know what we're capable of far more than we do. But Lord, I pray that as we stand here with honesty saying, God, I believe, but help my unbelief. Help me overcome my unbelief. Lord, I pray for each one of us. If we've got a situation or something going on in our lives that Lord, we're kind of built a wall of unbelief around it. Lord, that you would help us break down that wall. Father, that we would start to walk confidently into that situation. Lord, that we would be hearing from you. Lord, I pray you would speak. Even as we're praying now, that you would speak into that situation and that, Lord, we would be like Gideon, that we think we've got a plan, we think we've got a bit of power, a bit of opportunity, but Lord, when you say, no, I want you to do something so different that it seems impossible, that we would have confidence to step out in that. Lord, I pray we would be people that would be encouraged by Gideon, that his ability to go, I'm going to go up with ridiculous odds, knowing that God is on my side. That I'm going to go into that situation to see what God wants to be changed, to see that turned around and changed. Father, for every life here, every person in this room, I pray that you would come upon them in power, in reality, that they would know your presence, and they would have such a conviction that what you're saying to them now, that they would go out and put that into practice and watch what you do with their obedience. Amen.